I'm Andrew Cox. I'm a software design engineer here, and this is Ralph. He's a developer lead. We both work on the Pivot Viewer Silverlight Control. And we're going to talk about how you can build a custom Pivot-based application for your web page. So the first thing to know is that unlike what we demoed a few months ago at the Mix conference, Pivot Viewer is not just a Silverlight application that you can plug into your web page. It's a control that you can plug into your Silverlight application. If what you really want is a Silverlight application that just has a Pivot Viewer, that's really easy to get, and we're going to talk about how you get there. But if you want more, if you want to write a Silverlight application around your Pivot Viewer control, that's now possible. On this slide, we have a diagram of how Pivot Viewer fits into your application and into your web page. So Pivot Viewer control is actually going to do the display of the collection and the communication with the servers for the CXML file and the DZC file that you got discussions about today. And then inside your Silverlight application, we have a Pivot Viewer API that you can use to communicate with the control. And if you prefer to use JavaScript to control the interaction, our control is fully scriptable, and you can go ahead and write a very simple application around the control, plug that into your web page, and use JavaScript to manipulate things. So what does the API give you? It gives you a pretty simple interface between the control and your application to load collections, manipulate the display of those collections, and get notifications as the user interacts, and apply custom colors. The custom colors, we're not going to go through a demo today, but we'll talk a bit about that. And also, people have been asking about tracking the user as they use the Pivot Viewer control. We've tried to provide enough notifications in here that you can do all the tracking that you might want to do by watching the events from the control. If you find that there's something that's missing, please let us know. We'll try to add it. We provide a couple of simple methods. One is load the collection, and another is get item, which gets you the metadata information about an item. The properties that we provide as the control is running is what are the collection name and URI of the collection that's showing, how many items does it have, what's the current item, and what items are in scope given the filters that you're using now, what are you sorting by, and one long viewer state string, which you can use to manipulate the state of the control overall. And again, all the properties have change notifications, so you can watch whenever any of these changes, you can react to that change. Other events besides the change notifications, we tell you when a collection finishes loading or when it failed loading. We'll tell you when a user double clicks on an item or clicks on any of the links in the metadata. And then we have one extra part of the API, which it allows you to add your own custom buttons to the, as you zoom in on an item, you'll be able to see buttons that do whatever you want to do with that item. So I mentioned we'd talk a bit about colorization. So we don't have a demo of this today, but this shows you that whereas our Pivot Viewer control by default is going to look pretty similar to the Pivot application, this is an example of how if you had a dark colored web page, you could have a dark themed Pivot Viewer to go along with it.
So this is a little different from regular Silverlight styling. We're not supporting full Silverlight styling in V1. Kind of going back to what Gary said earlier, we kind of want to keep some control over what the experience is like on various sites. So this is kind of a limited styling that lets you just set colors. And every color in the app or in the control is changeable, but the major layout of it and the font and how things work is still under our control. It will be a brush. So you'll be basically the way this works is a resource dictionary, and you hand us some number of brushes that's still being determined, somewhere between 15 and 25, and that will determine what the app looks like, what the control looks like.
So a brush can be a solid color, a gradient, or an image if that's what you want. So the rest of the demo, we're going to go through how to build a Pivot Viewer application and how to add some features to it. We're going to start with a with the simplest Pivot Viewer application you can get. It's just going to be a Pivot Viewer control in your application, and it will load a collection. It's pretty easy, four steps. We're going to start a project, add a reference, add a Pivot Viewer control, and load a collection. The caveat here is that the beta bits that you've received, they'll need to go through some special processing in order to use them. So we'll go over that as we build the application. So we're going to start a Silverlight navigation application. So before we do anything, the application is just going to have a home and about page, application name. We're going to go ahead and put a pivot viewer right here. And we'll do that by, let me switch out a full screen here. First thing we want to do is we want to add a reference in the XAML to our Pivot Viewer binaries. And we want to add a, let me make this a little bigger. We're going to rip out this what's here, and we're going to add a pivot viewer control instead. All right. So we need those actual binaries in our project. We're going to go reference them. This is where with the bits you'll receive off the zip file, because you download them off the web, you're going to need to go unblock them before you can use them in a project. And I'm going to show you quickly what that means. So when you open up the Pivot Viewer folder on the zip file that you'll get, there's a bin directory, and it has the DLLs and the debug information for all those DLLs. You'll need to individually go through the file properties, and there will be an unblock button here. You'll need to do that. When we ship the final version with an installer, it will be all signed. Everything will be fine. You won't have to do this. But for today, that's what you'll have to do to use these. I'm going to go ahead and add references to those files. And start the app, and we should see a pivot viewer in here. We've got an empty pivot viewer, it doesn't load a collection yet. So getting the viewer in there is that simple. Now we'll go into the main page, tell our pivot viewer to load a collection. Got a little cheat sheet here where you can remember the collection URL. Using for that namespace. Now our Pivot Viewer loads a collection. This is our collection of top-rated movies from AMG. So our control as it is now will perform mostly like the Pivot application, with a few exceptions. One of the main exceptions is that when you click on links here that would normally go to other collections or web pages, we don't do anything. And the reason we don't do anything is because instead we're going to fire your application event and let the application decide what it wants to do. If you get a link to another collection, maybe you want to open it in the same viewer, maybe you want to open a new viewer. If you get a link to a web page, maybe you want to open it in the same tab, maybe you want to open it a different tab. And as I mentioned before, maybe you want to do some tracking to what users are clicking. So in addition to opening another page, maybe you want to track what they did. But for this application, we're going to stop here and show that's the four simple lines. Here was my cheat sheet here. Four simple lines I needed to add to get a Pivot Viewer up and running in our application. For the rest of the demo, I'm not going to program things as we go. I'm going to actually pull up projects that we've pre-built.
Wait, go back to the slides.
Yeah, I'm going to... So the next thing you want to do is you want to extend your PivotView application. Some very basic functionality you want is what I just talked about. You want to open a new tab when a web page link is clicked, and you want to load a new collection when a collection link is clicked. So we've got a really simple demo that's going to add those features. So what we've got in this application is, in the XAML, we've got exactly what we covered in the simple demo. We just put a pivot viewer control right here. And in code, we add an extra handler for link clicked. We do some simple processing here to find out if the link contains .cxml. If so, if it doesn't contain .cxml, we navigate to the web page. If it does, we break it into the parts we need and we load the collection from it. I'll go ahead and demo how that works. Now, as we go in to view one of these movies, this collection is actually built as a linked collection, meaning that some of the metadata links here take you to other collections that are related. We've got the set of movies here, but maybe we want to find out more about the cast of Jurassic Park, so we click on this link. We'll load the new collection with the actors from Jurassic Park. One of the things you'll notice that's missing right now is the ability to go back to where we were.
Sadness.
That's not something you want, but we'll talk about how we can add that later in the demo. So that's the very simple functionality you'll probably want to add to every application, although you might want to customize how it works. All right, now we'll get into slightly more complicated scenarios. So maybe you want your application to have predefined filters. And the idea behind this is that you might want something like, if you have a set of employees, you might want Northwest top performers. Or if you have a set of cars, you might want to link users to new cars. And rather than having them dig through the filter pane to filter to what you want them to see, you might want to provide links across the top of your application that will quickly take them to those predefined filter states. They're pretty simple to implement. You can just add a button on your web page or your Silverlight application. When that button is clicked, you set the viewer state. The viewer state property is the thing I talked before about, which controls the sort, the view, meaning grid or histogram, and all of the filters, all in one property, so you can set everything at once. I'll load that sample up.
You have to stop.
No, I have to stop the application. Predefined filters demo. We'll go ahead and run it and show you what it does, and then we'll talk about how it works. So one of the things I've added to the display of this application is at the bottom, I show the current filter state. And the reason that I did that in this application is because for a predefined filter state, you're going to want to set this when the user clicks a button. Now you can see that, at least in our current implementation, these are part of our internal state. They're kind of not really human readable and not easy to form on your own. So if you want to develop an application with predefined filters, you'll probably want to have a text box like this displaying the current filter state as you go, so that you can find that you build the filter state by going through the filter pane. The state will show up down here. You copy it into your application.
You can also use the client application. Once you've gotten to the filter state you want, if you hit Control-Alt-U, the address box at the top will show you the full URL with the filter state attached to the end of the CXML.
So the predefined filters I've added here, first I'll point out we're looking at the new cars collection. I think Jeff did a bit of talking about the design of these trade cards during his design discussion. So we've got a couple of filters here. One of them gives you hybrid SUV. So this is doing two things at once. It checks the SUV crossover category and the hybrid. So you can see we've got six of them here. And then a more complicated one, American cars. That actually applies several filters in the make category to get all of the American car manufacturers. So that shows how you can quickly and simply call attention to a specific set of items in your collection. As you can see down here, the viewer state is quite long. But what we would do is we would just copy this, and I'll show you where we'll put that in our application. So as before, when a link is clicked, or when a button is clicked in our app, we get the event. And all we do is we just tell it to to load the current collection with this new filter state. So there's a bit of complication here in that load collection is how you change the filter state. The reason we decided to do it that way is that you don't have to load a collection and then change the filter state and get two state changes in your application. So for right now, the API says you need to pass both of these in, but if you pass the current collection, it will not reload the collection, just change the filter state. Anyway, so I've plugged in the two filter states right here, and that's how we have our two buttons for hybrid SUVs or American cars. So it's as simple as a few lines of code. We've got that scenario covered. All right, so we're going to move up a little bit, and now we're going to implement a shopping cart on top of your collection. So if you noticed before, when you're looking at the collection, unlike in the app where we had buttons up here on each item, we don't have any buttons yet because by default we don't have any. But every time you select an item or hover over an item, we go and we ask your application, what buttons should we show here? And if you choose, you can fill those in. And you can fill them in with information specific to an item because we also pass you the information about what item we want you to show buttons for. So, yeah, for the shopping cart scenario, your application would keep track of what items are in the cart. And when Pivot Viewer asks what custom buttons to apply, if the item's in the cart, you say add, and if the item's not in the cart, you say add to cart. If it is in the cart, you say remove from cart. You can take a look at that code. So we have a get custom actions for item, which is an override on Pivot Viewer. So you need to create your own Pivot Viewer in order to implement this scenario. But all you have to implement is this one method. And normally, it just returns the base class method just returns an empty list. We're going to take a list of custom actions and fill it in with either add to basket or remove from basket. And as you can see, a custom action is just the text for the button, a link to the image that goes along with the text, some tooltip text, and then an ID, a string ID that identifies what button the user clicked. We'll go ahead and show this scenario off now. As I zoom in on an item, some buttons start to show up. So I've got add to basket. Yeah, we're going to do the shopping scenario with cars. So I'm going to take the Mitsubishi Eclipse and I'm going to add it to my basket. And as you notice, I've got a little list box over here that's going to display what's in the cart. In addition to handling the action by adding and removing our cars from a set, I'm also updating a list box with the content. So let's have fun here. We'll get a Mustang as well. And what else looks good? I know there's some really good ones in here. Let's sort for sports cars. All right, I'll get a Porsche too. All right, so now you can see what we've got in our basket. And you can see that just for the items we've added, the button changed from add to basket to remove from basket. So we can go ahead and click that for the Porsche. Maybe we don't have enough money to buy that. And it removes it from our list over here. So that's pretty simple to implement as well. We've got the code I showed you, basically just add the code to handle the button click, adds and removes the items from a set, and then some other code to update the list box when an action is executed.
So we call this method every time you mouse over an item, every time you focus an item, which is clicking on it and we zoom into it, and also every time you click one of these buttons, we call the method again in case you need to refresh the set of buttons.
And so the most advanced scenario we're going to go through here is travelog integration. So travelog integration is something that the app already provides, but you'll need to write a little bit of code to get this working. It's not that hard. We'll go through it. But we don't cover it in the control because it's not really the responsibility of the control. It's more the responsibility of a Silverlight application. Again, you can pull the sample and we're going to use a Silverlight feature called Content Frame. And Content Frame provides cross-browser integration with the back and forward buttons. Here's how it works. Your Content Frame might be showing page one. If your application is on HTTP sample, your Content Frame might be showing page1.xaml. And it does this by actually loading page1.xaml as a resource from your application and then rendering that XAML in the Content Frame. When you click on a link that should take you to page two, the Silverlight application loads page two and changes the hash code on the URI to page two. So when the hash code changes, it doesn't unload your application or actually change the page. It just changes the state of the application, but it does add an entry to the travelog, which will enable the back and forward buttons to start working. And when that happens, the browser's back button is enabled. And then the other part of the equation is when your Content Frame is showing page two, if you click the back button, the browser will change the hash to page one. And Content Frame, here's the key piece of functionality that it provides. It's gonna tell you that the hash has changed, and your application can now load page1.xaml, and now you're showing page one. So we're gonna modify the way Content Frame works a little bit in this demo. We don't want to actually load different pages because that will unload our pivot viewer control, and then we'll have to reload it again and reload the collection. What we want to do instead is we want to always show the same pivot viewer, but we want to use the navigation events to tell us to change the viewer state. And then in turn, when the user navigates through changing filters, we want to notice the viewer state changing and we'll tell the hash code to change, which will update the state of the application and enable the back button. So I've got that demo loaded here. So the first part of it is the modification of how the Content Frame works. So when you start a standard Silverlight navigation application, you get this Content Frame in your app. Navigation Frame. And initially, it would load a home or about page if you just started the application, if you just started the project. But we've plugged in a navigation page that contains a pivot viewer. And it's also got a content loader property that tells it how to load content. We've overridden the content loader so that it's a static content loader. Instead of loading XAML resources and rendering them, it's going to just keep returning the same static content over and over. So our static content loader code is here. You'll see that in the sample. I'm not going to go over it too much in detail, but that's the basic functionality, is that we want to keep loading the same pivot viewer. So once we've plugged in our static content loader to load the same pivot viewer page over and over, it's a matter of handling the viewer state change and the navigating event. When the viewer state changes, I'm going to construct a relative URI, which this URI doesn't actually point to any content, but it's a relative URI which indicates our viewer state, and then we stick that relative URI onto the hash by navigating the content frame to it.
So the viewer state changes every time the user does pretty much anything, changing the filters, changing the sort, changing what view you're looking at. It does not represent the zoom state or the pan state. That is not represented in viewer state.
So in turn, when the user navigates, by using the back and forward buttons, we're going to take that viewer state and we're going to decode. We're going to take the URI take the relative URI off the hash, and we're going to decode it back into a viewer state and plug that viewer state into the pivot viewer control. So in this case, if I go and I say I'm looking at a baseball player, I'm going to click on his team, Florida Marlins, to filter to just his team. Now you can notice that the back button is now enabled. Let's do a few more changes. I'm going to switch to histogram view. And right now that's not that interesting because we're grouping by team. Let's group by salary. Okay, now we get some kind of interesting data out of this. Well, let's say we want to go back. So this gives you the same style of functionality that you had in the application. You can go forward to where we were again. So this again is a little bit more complicated than the previous scenarios, but it's definitely something you can add to your application. Probably something you will want to add. All right. So a couple of caveats I want to call out on this is though, are that, as I mentioned before, in this demo, we're actually using the viewer state on the hash for the URI. So we discovered through our work that URIs actually have a maximum length, which isn't that long, and our viewer states have a maximum length, which is much longer. So this demo will work for most cases in this collection. But if you were to try and get to a state where your viewer state string is really long, it will crash this demo. There's several ways you can work around that, and one of the ways that's covered in the demo on the bits that you can download is that you can map a unique ID and have that be your URI and have it map internally in your application to a viewer state that may be longer than a URI could fit. So when you download the sample, you'll see that kind of code. So there's a couple of gotchas with using the Silverlight control versus using the application. For the most part, we can load the same collections the application can load. One thing that's not mentioned here is that your images need to be in JPEG format. The application can support JPEG as well as HD photo and a couple other image formats. If you put your images in HD photo and possibly some of the other formats, Silverlight will load your collection and think it's doing the right thing, but won't display anything. Another gotcha that we get asked a lot by early adopters of this control is you need a client access policy.xml on the root directory of the server where both the CXML file and the DZC are. So I've included a link in this presentation that gives some description of what client access policy is and how it's formatted. Basically, it's a file that lets the server know that Silverlight's allowed to access files on that server, and Silverlight won't download any content from that server unless this file's there telling it it's okay. It's a security feature. You must install the Silverlight 4 toolkit. This is a little confusing because there's a package called Silverlight 4 Tools for Visual Studio, and there's Silverlight 4 toolkit. They are separate. You need both of them. If you don't install the toolkit, it will build fine, just your application will crash when you try to run it. And then again, the thing I pointed out earlier, that the preview bits from the web, you need to unblock your DLLs before trying to use them in your project. That's as simple as going to the file properties for each DLL and hitting unblock. And if that unblock button isn't there, you're probably already clear. The other key is about being preview bits is that the sample that is included, it points to a absolute path, I believe, or a relative path to the assembly references, which is probably not going to be the same path that you're going to copy your bits onto. With the installer, we should fix this feature, but for now, the way you can correct this is when you open the sample, you'll need to delete the references and then add them again, pointing to where you've copied the DLLs on your disk.